You're tuned into a recording of the Living While Leading podcast, which was originally recorded live on LinkedIn. My guest today is Leanne Hobson, the founder and CEO of Alinea Partners, a global distribution, IT reseller, channel partner, and vendor consulting company. Stay tuned as we discuss how to balance kindness with clarity for effective leadership. We'll share insights on how showing respect, demonstrating empathy, and proper communication is essential in today's business environment. We'll also hear how being seen as unkind can lead to professional setbacks and offer guidance on how to embrace your kinder self without being perceived as weak. Find the full transcript and other resources for women leaders at livingwhileleading.com/43. You're listening to Living While Leading with your host, Sharon Ehrlich, where I help women IT executives gain more control over their careers and carve out time to care for themselves and family. Welcome, everybody, to the Living While Leading Executive Corner. My name is Sharon Ehrlich, and I am an executive coach for women in leadership roles who want to live and work in alignment with their values. I'm also a podcast host of the Living While Leading podcast, which is broadcast every Tuesday. I am so happy because I have invited Leanne Hobson to talk to us today about balancing kindness with clarity for effective leadership. Think of this session as a mentoring session for whatever stage you are in your career. You're probably going to get some insight, information, or just ways to reframe things. So I'm going to turn it over to Leanne. And Leanne, please introduce yourself to everyone.
Well, Sharon, thank you for inviting me. It's wonderful to be here. I am the CEO and founder of Alinea Partners. And we are a global distribution, IT reseller, channel partner, and IT vendor consultant. So what we do all day is we help companies change their portfolios, create new packages of offers that are focused on CEOs instead of CIOs, and we train salespeople on how to sell those offers. In addition, we are the only company that does high-tech B2B secret shopping, and we've done over 800 of them globally.
We are going to jump right into the questions just because this is a really interesting topic, and I think that the audience is going to get a lot from it. So I'm going to start with my first question. The first question I'd like to start with, Leanne, is how do you define the balance between kindness and clarity? And why is it crucial for effective leadership in today's business environment?
Maybe we should start first by defining kindness and clarity. That's particularly important to me because I have 4+ children. And when the oldest was married, my husband was writing a speech. And because we live in Austria, he was writing it in German. And we were trying to come up with a really good way of explaining that regardless of what happens, kindness is one of the most important things in a relationship, and even when you're really angry. And we had a hard time coming up with the exact translation. But from an English perspective, I see the difference between kindness and clarity as kindness is really respect, it is empathy, and it is proper communication. Where clarity is transparency, it's being concise, and it's being direct. And I think that the two can live together, and that the two have probably always been important in business as well as in personal lives. But I think we went through a time definitely in the high tech industry, where the two didn't always work together. Directness took over. And kindness took a very back seat. And I think that it plays more and more of a role as we look at global skill shortages in particular industries, as we look at a changing workforce where, you know, the baby boomers are now really looking at retirement. And we have a whole new set of a new generation coming into work that frankly has different values and different ways of looking at things, which is wonderful. But to have the respect to try to listen and understand what different people are trying to accomplish, what they're trying to communicate, is absolutely critical. And one of the best ways to do that is to be very direct in what you're saying, and very clear in what you want, what you're looking to achieve, and to make sure that that is also said with the equal respect for both parties involved or multiple parties involved.
You said a lot there, and you know that I also have a very long career in IT, and I was in the industry when things got a little mean and a little nasty at times, just because of the speed that things were going at. I think folks had the idea that being compassionate, being respectful, that there wasn't enough time to do those things. They just had to sort of barrel straight through. And I think we all understand that that's probably not the most effective way, particularly for folks like you and I who are working in an international environment, cross-culturally. You know, there were so many other considerations to think of, and it's such a nuanced approach that one needs when communicating in that sort of a space. How do you maintain clarity in your leadership approach without compromising on empathy, kindness, particularly when you're having difficult conversations?
One of the most difficult conversations that I can have on almost a daily basis is when I have to land the results of a secret shopping program. What we do is we actually try to buy hardware, software, and services from companies. And when I have to sit with them and say, you know, we're very happy, we would have purchased from you today, or conversely, we're disappointed, we would not have been able to purchase from you this time, and then to explain why. That conversation, depending on how it's delivered, can go in many different directions. And we've been doing this since 2014. So I've had a lot of different experiences. And sales directors react very differently in the UK as they do in Turkey, or in the Nordics, or in India. And so listening is one of the tools that I've had to really hone in on and improve over time. And, you know, you made an interesting comment about how things were before in the high tech industry. And I have to agree, and it's maybe even a little sad that we laughed about it, but, you know, we both went through it. We have the battle scars. I mean, myself, I was wrapped up in it and at times didn't necessarily perform the way that I would today. Time was an element, but I think also it was the overall cultural environment at that time. And so then I didn't listen. I thought there was a direction that we needed to move in. I moved in that direction. And frankly, I was probably suffering a bit from imposter syndrome at the time. So I barreled ahead and did what, you know, the corporate culture demanded. As I've started my own company, as I've gone along in my overall experiences at work, at home, that listening skill is the thing that I think really brings empathy, where you can hear not only directly what's being said, but sometimes what's indirectly being said. The empathy tool for me would be listening.
And listening with both ears, which is very difficult these days when you think about that we have all of these distractions. You know, we have sometimes some of us have two or three mobile devices in front of us at any given time where they're all flashing, vibrating and doing something. And you're trying to have a conversation with someone and also attend to those distractions at the same time. It makes it very difficult to listen and to hear and to really absorb what's being said. And like you said, it's not only what's being said, but sometimes what's being implied and the nuances of how this communication is taking place. When we talk about your leadership style,
What strategies do you employ that work when you are dealing with diverse teams and international clients? Because you did mention that you're doing secret shopping for clients in India, in the Nordics, in the UK. How do you handle that?
It's interesting because working globally and in different countries, I hear quite often the same things. Every country thinks they're different. We do things differently. In many markets, there is a predisposition to think that if you aren't based in my country, you don't know how to work in my country. And so I lead with the facts of what we're working on. Let's say secret shopper, whether it was a good experience or a bad experience. But then I tend to have different layers of how I start to deliver the message. And if I see that something I've said makes somebody change their posture, or they start to change their tone of how they're talking, or I'm losing them because they are looking at those different screens, then I go down a level and get very much more precise in what I'm talking about, much more concise, not in an aggressive way, but to tone down the message and to make it very, very simple. And also to think about when I deliver that, to say it in an educating way or in a way that couches things as, I have seen a lot of things and best practice looks like this. Companies that aren't achieving best practice are usually doing these things, and explain what those are. If you're looking to be anywhere on the scale from good to best, these are the things that you would want to look at. So I also try to give options so that they can fit themselves in where they feel necessary.
This approach that you just described, Leanne, sounds like a very non-judgmental approach. You've seen basically everything. I can hardly imagine that you get surprised very easily now when you are doing these secret shopper activities in these really high-stakes situations, because correct me if I'm wrong, but what you are trying to purchase in these scenarios are not inexpensive solutions, correct?
Not necessarily. Perhaps we would be looking to buy a license of some sort of software like Microsoft 365. Then you're not looking at too much money. Or we're looking at buying a Dell computer, for example, or a big printer. Those could be things that we'd be looking to buy. We've seen a lot of things, but I always get surprised. Things that have good and bad. There are a lot of really good practices out there. It's very interesting to go in and really try to understand why a company has done what they've done, and also sometimes just shed light and shed clarity on how it's being done differently, which helps them to, you know, make that step. And there's really nothing out there that we've seen that is so horrible that it deserves a judgment against it. Every company that we've worked with and their other partner companies, they're out there trying to do their best. I run across very, very few companies that are out there just, you know, trying to make money and take advantage of people. It doesn't tend to happen in our industries. Judging people wouldn't help. They wouldn't make the changes. It's sort of like your kids. If you start to say, you should do this, they end up doing the opposite. It's sort of the same thing. And you show them the mirror. This is how you performed, but then also show them this is how you could do it differently. They tend to do it, and then they tend to get more customers and keep more customers.
I can remember taking a similar approach when I was raising my son, honestly speaking. There's not too much of a difference there. I want to talk a little bit about the perception of kindness versus weakness. I've had this experience myself where I have been a people manager, a leader of teams, and have tried to treat individuals with the respect that I believe everyone deserves. And sometimes that has been misconstrued as weakness. And folks have tested me and have pushed me. Just wanted to talk to you. Have you ever confronted that? And how have you navigated that perception?
Can you give me one of your examples? Because it may bring something to my mind.
I'll give you an example that comes immediately to mind. I was leading a digital sales team in Bratislava, and there was one person on the team who would always come to me with a tale. My child has this, I need to come to work late, but I'll take that hour and I'll make it up someplace else. Fine, you can do that. Then next day, it was the dog. And then the next day, it was something else. And, you know, there was a point where I just thought, you know, I can accommodate everyone. I know that we all have lives and things get very complicated, but there is a point where I feel like I'm being taken advantage of. But more importantly, there's a whole team. There were 52 other people here. And if I start to say yes to everybody, I'm going to have chaos here. I won't be able to run my business. And so that became for me a very difficult conversation to have, to say, I get it, I understand, but I also have limits. And there are limits because we're running a business here and there are things that we have to do. Now, this is obviously a very small and simple example, but that's an example that came immediately to mind for me.
It's interesting. I think those types of scenarios happen a lot with employees, with clients. Something similar would be having a conversation with a client and there's something that will just make the service better that we're offering. And it really isn't too difficult for me to do it. So I will say, we'll just do that as well. I look at it as a customer delighter. Oh, I didn't expect to get that. And I suddenly have something that I didn't expect and I don't have to pay extra for it, for example. I've certainly had instances where clients have then turned around and said, well, can you also give me then a discount on this, or can you offer that for free? Or, you know, you give them a finger and they take an arm. But in those cases, I find it pretty easy to just turn and say directly and concisely, well, we had offered you this and we gave you this delighter or this extra piece of the service. So at this time, we're not in a position to be able to offer you, you know, whether you want that service for free or, you know, reduced price. We see and hear from our clients that we offer a significant level of value. So if I were to undercut myself at that point, I would be diminishing the value of the overall company and everyone who works here. So that would be one of the other reasons that I wouldn't want to do that.
We do have a comment here from April who says, my perspective is that most corporate environments are awash in male perspective in history. Kindness trends towards feminine energy, hence seen as a weakness. Do you have anything you'd like to say about that, Leanne?
Actually, when you asked the question, I thought, well, we always have to be careful not to sound like we're coming from a position of weakness. We're women. I resonate with that. I have to say, since I started my own company and over the years, I am confronted with that less and less. Maybe it's just because I'm older and have more experiences. Right. But I also believe times have changed. Mm-hmm. And being kind doesn't hurt anymore. And in fact, it's seen as a definite plus point.
We do have a lot of people who are participating here who are a little bit earlier in their career. I'd like to for you to speak to them a little bit. And talk about what advice you would give to emerging leaders who aspire to lead with both kindness and clarity.
First of all, it won't be painful. So don't worry about that. If I was new in a management role, let's say you're thinking management or you're thinking really first job.
No, I'm talking about management.
I think that to be able to speak with each of your new employees, each of the people who are going to be reporting to you individually, and to ask them about their expectations and, you know, what their accomplishments to date have been, but also to talk to them personally, is something that will help you now, but also in the future. Developing a rapport with people is always going to make sure that you are remembered and respected. That isn't everything that comes into respect, but it definitely helps. And too often in business, people start and maybe they're a little nervous or maybe they're a little unsure, and they get down to business and they focus on what's important in the business. I would encourage you to start early in broadening the conversation. People still want to work for people. And if you establish what we call people power, and let me just explain the difference between people and position power. People power is when somebody wants to work for you and you are respected as an individual. Position power is when you get the job of CEO or director or manager, and people tend to think that the respect comes with the position versus the person who holds it.
I've done a lot of sales enablement, and one of the things that we always talk about in sales is that people buy from people that they know, like, and trust. And that's not too different from what you just described here as a leader of a new team, is that you have to know your team. They have to trust you. And the only way that's going to happen is if you actually speak to the people. And I understand that folks have really aggressive targets and they feel like they have to hit the ground running, but you won't reach your targets without your whole team buying into the mission, right? And so it's not a one-person show, and you do need to create that sort of atmosphere, and in this people power that you talked about really needs to be a priority. I have a question, which I think might be a tough one. If you don't want to answer it, you don't have to, but now I put you on the spot here. Have you ever had an instance where being perceived as unkind led to a significant professional setback or misunderstanding? And how did you recalibrate your approach?
Yes, I had one that it doesn't haunt me, but I will tell you the story and then I will feel like I'm sitting there. Early on in my career, I was working for a high-tech company in a marketing role, and marketing was separate from communications. And I was reporting directly to the president of the European organization, but I also had a dotted line, as we say, into the US organization, into marketing. And we had a big launch coming up. Instead of marketing owning program development for the sales and marketing campaign, communications decided to do it. And they decided to do it stateside. And I was sitting in Vienna working for Europe. And I tend to have an upper hand, so to speak, when working with my American colleagues, because we speak the same language. I'm sure you experience that as well. I'm not as thoughtful, maybe. And what happened was the program came out. It was a series of brochures. When marketing talked about a program, we were thinking about how is the offer packaged? What's the messaging around the package? Is there a services component? Will there be an assessment with it, for example? What is the sales motion? You know, what's the call to action that you want the sales team to do once they get this information? So many different parts were missing. And I wrote this email back thanking them very much for the materials, but there appeared to be some gaps in the program. Well, my use of the word gap resulted in what probably was about a 4-page long email back with lots of exclamation points, lots of bold and red, educating me and also telling me that I did not understand, and it was very rude of me to have said there was gaps. So obviously there was this feeling that the word gap meant they had done something horribly wrong. Underlying, there were missing parts of it that we needed, but the use of that word was not a good idea. And I also had follow-up phone calls with many people from the organization stateside to mentor me on how to write emails and how to give feedback.
That stung. And one little word there, huh? Gap.
3-letter word. Which I rarely use anymore.
I bet you don't. And I think we all can learn a lesson from that when we're dealing with our colleagues who speak English as a first language. Avoid the word gap. There might be some other synonyms that one might use. Leanne, I always like to ask my guests, what advice would they give to their younger self if they could, based on everything that you understand about your career journey, what you've experienced working internationally, living internationally, being the CEO and founder of your own company? What would you say to the younger Leanne?
Take a deep breath and breathe a little more. Don't always think that you have to keep, you know, pushing forward. I think that earlier on in my career, I was very much in a what's the next step, what's the next position type of mode. Had I earlier breathed, then maybe a few other opportunities would have come my way, or experiences would have come my way that I would have also appreciated. And I probably wouldn't have been as stressed as I was for the first 15 years of my career.
Very wise words. I appreciate your vulnerability in sharing that. Well, we are coming to the end of our show today, Leanne. I can't believe the time has run so fast because I have 5 more questions I wanted to ask you. Leanne, thank you so much for your words of wisdom today. It was a pleasure having you, and I hope that one day you'll consider joining me again so we might be able to talk about your perspective on leadership and leadership topics.
Happy to, Sharon. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, everyone, and thank you for those who participated live and for those who are listening to the podcast or the replay. All the best.
Thanks for listening today. This is your time. Give yourself permission to reclaim what's important to you and be who you want to be. If you're getting value from this podcast, please subscribe, share it, or write a review. And connect with me on livingwhileleading.com or on LinkedIn. And don't forget to tune in next week.